Sizani, who was removed from this committee and was discharged from this committee to be the chief whip of the majority party in parliament. Because of that, a vacancy was there, and we have now to do the normal procedure to elect the permanent chairperson of this committee. It's not an acting chairperson. We are electing him in terms of the rules of parliament, rule 129. That reads as follows. Rule 129, subsection 1. A committee must elect one of its members as the chairperson of the committee. I will call upon nominations from members. Thank you. Ms. McKenyon, any nomination?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to nominate Honorable J. Tivedi as the chairperson of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Can I call for a seconder for this nomination? Thank you. I will second this nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Member. Any
other nominations?
Any further
nominations?
Thank you, Chairperson. I close the nomination.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. I will now read the responsibilities of the new chairperson. Can you come and have a seat here, Mr. Tivedi? Thank you, Honourable Members. The chairperson of a committee is subject to other provisions of these rules and the directions of the committee. A, presides at the meetings of the committee, may act in any matter on behalf of and in the best interest of the committee when it is not practical to arrange a meeting of the committee to discuss that matter. If that matter concerns 1. A request by a person to give evidence or make oral representations to the committee. 2. Any other request to the committee. 3. And the initiation of any steps or decisions necessary for the committee to perform its functions or exercise its powers. I would like to repeat this one. To initiate of any steps or decisions necessary for the committee to perform its functions or exercise its powers. Performs the functions, tasks and duties and exercise the powers that the committee, resolutions of the assembly and legislation may assign to the chairperson. In the event of an equality of votes or any question before the committee, the chairperson must exercise the casting vote in addition to the chairperson's vote as a member. The chairperson must report to the committee on any steps taken in terms of sub-rule 2B, which is may act in any matter on behalf of and in the best interest of the committee when it is not practical to arrange a meeting of the committee to discuss that matter. Thank you very much, members. I give to the...
Thank you very much, Madam. Let me take this opportunity to thank the committee for having elected me to lead the committee and say from the onset that I will expect your cooperation, because it is through working together that we can be able to advance the interest of the committee. I think all of us are quite aware that the mandate that this committee is having at its disposal is quite a very huge mandate, which require that all of us must approach these emotive issues with care, with level-headedness, knowing very well that whatever we decide will have a long-lasting impact on the lives of our people, and we go a long way in terms of reversing the injustices that were meted to our people. And I believe that much as it is difficult, it is not impossible. And working together with all of you, I think we will make our humble contribution to the process of ensuring that we create conducive conditions for our people to use the land for the benefit of their well-being. So in so saying, I'm therefore saying, honourable members, that I do appreciate and I'm quite aware of the responsibility that has been bestowed upon me. Working together jointly, I think we will go far. That's just by way of remark and appreciation. We will now go straight into the agenda of the day. We all have copies of the agenda. I take it that we all agree with the agenda as it stands. Is there any contrary view? In the absence of a contrary view, I take it that this agenda has been adopted. The next item will be the adoption of the minutes. It will be the minutes of the meeting which took place on the 12th of June. Remember.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, after I've read the minutes of the 12th of June 2013, I'm satisfied with the contents of the minutes. I therefore move that we adopt the minutes as presented.
There is a motion that the minutes be adopted. Any seconder? Honourable member. The minutes have been seconded. So the minutes have been adopted as a true reflection of what took place on the 12th of June. The next item will be an item on the Suburban Housing Action Campaign. It will be led by Mr. B. McNabb. It's you.
Yes, sir.
Over to you.
Okay, you can stay here. You want to sit on the end there?
Yeah, you can sit over there. Fine, no problem.
Firstly, Chair, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. I have taken my opportunity. As you know, the amendment bill, and I'm trying to highlight what I think is a policy issue that has been long-standing for the department. And I think, personally, I'll be very grateful if it was resolved, and I think it's in the interest of hundreds of thousands of our fellow South Africans that it is resolved. I've given a written submission, but I've taken my opportunity to give an oral one as well. I'll try and keep it brief. In summary, the state has provided 3 million houses post-transition. The issue is that the titling of those homes and the fluidity, I don't use too many fancy words, but the secondary market is not developed properly. So in the states, in this province, in its own study in the province in Dunoon in 2006, 36% of RDP units had been informally transferred. And my view is if you did the studies properly, the titles that have emerged on those 3 million units will be of the order of at least probably about half. So the current provincial MEC in the Western Cape, to his credit, has finally acknowledged that 65,000 titles have never emerged for RDP units. Our emerging communities, in two-thirds of South Africans live in urban areas, and in effect they have found a way around the state and they have conducted informal transfers of their homes because the formal process is too complicated and too expensive, or the title has not emerged. It does mean that they are suffering loss. The homes that are worth in the Western Cape, 80,000 Rand, if there was title and a formal process was conducted, are transferring for 30,000 Rand cash. So what we're trying to find is a mechanism that allows for a secondary market to develop in RDP units so that people can willingly transact their homes in a formal process. The problem with the informal process is that it means that women who get divorced have no rights, it means that the incumbents have no rights, it means there's no inheritance, it means that the municipal authority can't collect rates because the titled owner is absent, and this is an ongoing issue that continues to build. So part of our solution is that we don't think that the deeds office mechanism is the correct mechanism. It's too complicated and currently and takes too long. And if you're transacting a 100,000 RDP unit with a bond, it's going to cost you 12% of the asset value, which is way more than it would cost for a middle-class home of 600,000 Rand, where the total transaction cost would be 5%. And the proposed solution we've come up with is, in effect, to treat RDP or residential units under, say, 200,000 Rand, under a certain square meterage, to have them licensed with a municipality, not unlike a car or not unlike a driving license, where one can then transact one's house in a formal process where you can get bond finance against it, like you can with a car, but it's not in the current deeds office process. One way or another, we need a solution for the current process. In my personal view, it continues to impoverish whole sections of our urban majority. That's a summary. I'll take any questions, Chair.
Switch off the mic, sir?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, honourable members, that is the presentation. I will now open for questions and comments. If there are any. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and may I convey my congratulations on your election. Chairperson, through you to Mr. McNab, do you envisage that this would be a full title to the property? In other words, would the rights in law be the same as a house or property over that value? Thank you.
You can just note the questions and then you will respond later. And let me also request honourable members to introduce themselves as they speak so that as I leave this meeting, I must have a clue as to who I was actually working with today. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Honourable Chairperson, I'm Kevin Milam from the Democratic Alliance.
Honourable Member, the floor is yours. Was your hand up?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning. Members. My name is Mpoele Swate from Democratic Alliance. I'm also asking a question with regard to the proposal that Mr. McNab is asking that the new method be used where actually the deed registry or the registration of title deeds to be done by the municipality. So I just want to know as to whether if that actually is going to give the same status or is the same status as all the titles that we've got, because we now, as we speak now, we've got many titles that we've got, and so I just want to know as to whether does he want those people not to be registered at National. Thank you.
Comrade, sorry, honourable member, and then honourable member.
And upon honourable chairperson, I congratulate also on your appointment as our chairperson. You know, chairperson, I am very sorry, man, because I am seeing this document the first time as I am sitting here. So I want to find out now from the presenter, what is the problem with the present arrangement now regarding the deputies? I just want to find out. I didn't hear it properly. What is the problem with the present arrangement?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm from Zilangwenya Mabila. I'm just requesting the presenter, because he keeps on indicating the informal processes that were followed, Can you unpack that, and how was that done? And also, what were the consequences of those informal processes that were done?
In the absence of further questions, maybe if you need to take a second round after the presentation, the response, I'll allow you to do so. But let me just say, you'll pardon me, because you see, I was presiding over a caucus of the ANC, which consists of comrades. So if I say comrades, just bear with me. I will get used to honorable as time goes on. The floor is yours, sir.
Chair, I'd also like to congratulate you on your election. And you can call me comrade as well if you like, Chair. And everybody can call me Bavane if they like as well. Mr. McNabb is far too formal for me, but that's me. The first two questions, in effect, what I'm indicating is that the current process, we have a history, as we all know, in this country, and I certainly do not want a two-tier process. My current concern is that we have created a two-tier process, and I'm trying to get rid of it. So this process would involve full title, exactly the same process. In other words, it's treated like a car. You own the car, but you can transact, buy and sell your car willingly at a cheaper price. At the moment, and I'll get to the problems, you can't. Then the present problem. Let's just go through how the present problem. If I am provided with an RDP unit in Kuyasa, in Khayelitsha, if I am lucky, the title will emerge within a period of, let me not to be too jaundiced, 3 to 8 years. So by the time the title emerges, my life may have changed considerably. I may be divorced. With our history, I may have died of HIV. Whatever goes, people go get on with their lives. So if the title has never emerged, I can never transact that house formally. But I have to make my living choices day by day. So I have seen many instances, particularly with our recent past, where people have got title. They've even got a letter saying they will get title, but it's never come. But they're dying of HIV/AIDS, they don't want to be a burden on their family, so they conduct an informal transaction for that house. A house in the formal market would be worth about 80,000 Rand. They take 15,000 Rand cash tomorrow to move out of the house so as a new person can enter into that house. I have no problem with the process. The people are making life choices for themselves given their current circumstances. That's one example. Sanka, if we're lucky, there is a Sanka or street committee stamp or a police affidavit around the transaction. Even if the title has emerged after five years, the people who have that title, to transact that title formally, need to go through a normal conveyancing process. You need to have the owner able to fill out the paperwork. You need the buyer to fill out the paperwork. And the buyer has to pay transaction costs and bond costs if there's a bond involved. If the house is worth 80,000 Rand in the formal process and everybody knows what they're doing, that process will cost between, without a bond, 5,000 Rand, with a bond, 8,000 Rand. And the person selling the house will have to get a rates clearance certificate. So if there is a build-up of municipal arrears, and it's significant, that house is never going to transact. In my view, some of the figures are such that If you look at the older suburbs in Cape Town, and I am Western Capetonian, so if you look at Cape Town, if you look at Dunoon, Langa, Guguletu, those houses are transacting, it's a measurement of turn, they're transacting at about 0.5% a year. So it takes, in effect, if you work the other way, it takes 100 years for every house to transact. If you take a new suburb, a post-apartheid suburb like Parklands, which I regard as a post-apartheid suburb, fully integrated, that stock turn is 10%. So it's a magnitude of 20 times faster. That's the one example. So the problem is, if there's ever been an informal transfer, and I've already given you the figures from Dunoon in 2006, where one-third of the houses are already informally transferred at that stage, there is no current pathway back to formality. Unless you, because you can't find that owner, well, let me correct that slightly. There are formal pathways. There are two. One is to go to the High Court, and you can imagine how much that process costs and how long that takes. And the other is to make use of an act that hasn't been fully utilized by the department, called the Land Titles Adjustment Act. There was a workshop about 3-4 years ago. I don't think there's budget, and I don't think the act's been fully utilized. Ironically, it's a piece of apartheid legislation, but basically it allows the department to act as God. So, I mean, my examples, and I hope that's covered the questions and I'll take any more, is we need a mechanism that allows fluidity and movement in the RDP sector, that allows a secondary market to develop. I would like to add that it is a tremendous saving, if we can fix this, it's a tremendous saving for the Treasury. If I'm saying to you there are 3 million units, and the formal process is 80,000 Rand, and the informal process is 30,000 Rand, that's a saving of 50,000 Rand a unit. If there are 3 million units, it's a 150 billion Rand saving for the Treasury. It also means that you start to get movement where people are informally occupying units, but still on waiting lists for houses, but they actually have a house because they've conducted an informal transfer and they're living in a unit, but it's not visible at the moment because they don't have title. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Yes, sir.
Chairperson, thank you. Just a follow-up. And firstly, let me say that I think that this is a positive step. I think it's a constructive step to ensure that people have title to their properties. I think it's a good idea. Obviously, we need to debate it further and debate the nuts and bolts and things like that. But I do have one concern, and that is controls to prevent illegal or fraudulent transfers or transactions. You know, one of the things about the deeds office is that it regulates to a certain extent people hijacking somebody else's property. And I'd hate to see someone take occupation and then, because of the simplified process, obtain a title deed that is then recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I understand the presenter, but what I wanted to find out is that did they take into consideration that the Human Settlement Department has its own policies with regards to the transactions of the RDP houses? What processes are to be followed? After how long has the person the right to sell that particular house?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is also because I'm hearing the examples that are given is given on the RDP houses. So I just want to find out about if that also includes maybe the titles in the rural areas, because some of the rural areas now, as we speak, they are under municipalities. Are you only confining this to the RDP houses, especially in the townships? Because there are also people in the villages who also own sites and they don't have title. So I just want to know as to whether are you actually also including them in your proposal? Thank you very much.
Just two questions from my side.
Can you just explain this chair-to-chair arrangement by Sanko, which, in terms of the proposal here, it is actually sort of authorized by a police affidavit? Is it the document that is recognized that can stand the test of time in case there's a dispute? And secondly, the issue around the proposed solutions. The DNE there, you say where any dispute occurs, the local authority is the deciding authority. But then the E, you say where there is no claimant, the local authority is entitled to decide on the license. What are the measures there? Because you see, in the process of those decision making, there can be other unintended consequences occurring there. But I think moving forward, there has to be a lot of meat added here to ensure that the process is protected from any maladministration. Can you just comment on this, please?
Thank you, Chairman. If I could deal with the first question, which relates to fraudulent transfer in the process, 100%. The deeds office is substantially a very good mechanism. I would argue that the car registration or license renewing is also a pretty watertight process. What I would say is I'm a great believer in fixing 95% of the problem. I'm quite willing to manage 5% of the problem, but I'd like to fix 95% of the problem. I have no doubt we will have some issues at the margin. The lady, sorry, I don't know your name, but in terms of, I think you're referring to human settlements, and I think you're referring to preemptive rights. So the human settlements has a, don't get me going too much, but has a beautiful clause in many of their title deeds that says for a period of time, 5 to 8 years, the occupant is not allowed to transact that house because they've been provided it by the state. In effect, they've received a free house, and part of that story is that you're not meant to dispose of it. I have my own issues with the clause. The clause has been substantially ineffective because the title, as I say, takes about 5 years to emerge, so by the time the title emerges, the preemptive clause is gone anyway. I'm personally not in favor of the preemptive clause. I don't think it helps. I think it's disempowering for people. And I think anyway, as the process I've explained, people informally transact those houses anyway. So the preemptive has absolutely no application if there's an informal transfer. One can also apply to the province to have the preemptive waived, and generally it is given anyway. In my view, the state should be facilitating the transfer of the units, because for every unit that is transferred, it means the state no longer has to provide an RDP unit. And if the property is transferred to a first-time owner within the provisions of the state's provision, as I've covered, the state is saved from providing that unit, and the state saving is 150,000 rand, which is the cost of provision of the RDP unit, the all-in cost. The question about rural areas, don't get me going. That's tied in with Clara and the issues around communal land holding, and I have my own views. I don't think this is the right forum, but absolutely this licensing, in my view, I've at the moment stuck it to municipalities because I think it's easy to implement, but I think if it can be implemented more widely, my personal view is the faster we get people proper titles that they can transact properly, the better for all of us, including the communities, but the better for the country as well. The chair-to-chair process with Sanko, as the chair asked. The Sanko, you get a police affidavit, or sometimes you get a street committee letter. Unfortunately, I think as most of us know, the street committee will vary every year, so the intellectual capital around street committee will vary. So you may have a letter, but when you go back to the street committee 2-3 years later, the politics on the street may have changed. So that's the first part. The second part is the letter and the affidavit has absolutely no standing in terms of the deeds office conveyancing process. So all it does is allow an informal transaction to, it gives you protection on the street for an informal transaction, basically. That's the extent of a Sanko chair-to-chair informal process. Oh, it gives you protection on the street for the period of time that street committee is the same street committee and in its position. Unintended consequences. Chair, as you will, this is a process. I fully understand it's a process, and I've tried to, in summary, list some of the key pointers I think should be part of the process that would evolve. I have no doubt it needs further development and that further areas need to be covered. What I've tried to, in effect, put in there is that there is a registration fee with a municipality of 500 Rand. It's just a broader concept, but there would have to be a dispute resolution mechanism within the municipality or some way. My view that that 500 Rand was in effect a self-insurance for the municipality, a captive insurer, if you like, for them to resolve disputes where there will be disputes that will have to be resolved. But again, my view is those disputes will be substantially in the minority, and I think they'll be of the order of 1% to 2%, if not less. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. McNabb, for the presentation. We will note the presentation. Moving forward, we will engage with the presentation, but we want to thank you very much for adding your voice in this very important process. Along the way, of course, we'll have to compare notes with human settlement as a point that we made, so that there is no, we have to cross-reference, so that there's no confusion in the process. But thank you very much for your presentation, sir.
Thank you, Vitan Chair. Good luck.
Thank you very much. We will proceed to an item, Ninka versus Ninka, by Mr. Ninka. Huh? I try to the best of my ability. If ever I didn't pronounce it properly, it's not intentional, my apology. Can we move on?
Okay. So must I present here? Or?
Yeah, you can sit over there. Thank you very much.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Chairperson, for giving me this opportunity. Basically, our presentation as the Klinger family, we will go back to the books of the deeds registry. And we want to go back as centuries ago, because we believe that in order to sort this problem, in terms of moving forward, I think the previous speaker had made it presented very well in terms of moving forward. But also, we need also to understand that these challenges or this crisis that we find ourselves in, it was not a mistake. It was created for a purpose, and we find ourselves in this situation. Basically, that's why I'm saying that Klinger versus the Ninkas, because if you go to the deeds office in our registration books, you find that the first error, it's the names or the surnames. And my surname now is Klinger, and 100 years ago, my surname was Ninkas. So that is another problem that you find in the deeds registry, you know, where even our names or surnames that are corrupted. Now, that's why I am presenting Ninga versus Ninga. As I've said that, I am presenting history at the same time. I'll be presenting the work of those who walked before me, who paved the way, my great-grandfather, which is Yanki Ninga. It's Yanki Ninga that is the man that is my ancestor. And who is this man? Mentioning one ancestor, you make them all to live again. Now, I need to cut to the chase, you know, and where I'll be presenting about 5 points. Some may be relevant, some may be not relevant, but who cares? Ninga versus Ninga on the deeds registry. Basically, as I've said earlier on, that when you go to the deeds registry and then you find out about the family ownership, because I'm not talking about maybe a small plot, I'm talking about huge commercial land that the family owns. And back, as I've said, that century ago, we Just I want to give you the folio report of what we own, and then we can go through piece by piece up to the end. And my reference is it starts from 1913 and beyond. I don't want you to go before 1913 because we own land, commercial land, before even 1913. And basically we were chased in the commercial land because everything was justified through color. And we moved from where we were, which is Somerset East, and then we were chased away by the previous government there. Now, when we arrived at the site of the Kai, which is Transkei, again, we were told that there is another commercial land that we can buy, which is Sunat. Sunat is like a three-hour drive. It's a huge land. It's in between towns. And that land, now, if you go into the DIS registry and then you follow the folio report, you will see how the system cookbooks. For me, my 10 years of research, it was about the 10 years to see how do they cookbooks. How do the justice system, you know, I'm talking about the Supreme Court of South Africa, I'm talking about the Magistrate Court, and also I'm talking about the folio report. And then in my findings, you'll find that I'm in a situation that I can quote. You know, you'll find that maybe the handwriting, if you're doing just a forensic check of somebody from 1891, is writing books because we've owned land. There's a land that we bought in 1891. And you'll find out up to 1949, it's one handwriting. And it means that when you calculate, this person has worked for 59 years. Now, it shows that how the books are cooked. And I don't want you to go through because I've got a text documentation to support my statement, which maybe I will deal with that at a later stage, and even the discussion around that and then the court cases and everything. And also this, and how do they use King George the V to justify, you know, in terms of whatever that we have to use, that we have to pay. So we've got that evidence. Now, in the folio report, in the DIS registry, you find out, because if you go back, I will just go in the few inventories, you know. And when my grandmother died in 1913, you know, she married a Christian Wright, of course, you know, she owned a percentage. And then the inventory that was registered then, it was about 1,640-something sterling pounds, you know. And again, now that portion, that's where the crisis starts, because that came in a year in 1914, and then in 1913 also there was this law that prevented blacks in terms of owning land. So we become the victims of that. And now we can follow through even the families that have benefited, you know, in terms of the land that was taken from the Klinger family. We can follow that. We can even follow the inventory of 1922, you know, a 3.5 child, you know, Cartwright, who passed away. You know, the portion of land that he owned, you know, and even the families, so-called white families, that they benefited out of the process. And even the whole legal process in terms of the justice, how the justice, because I've got a situation, we experienced a situation where even our lawyer bidded, our own lawyer bidded against us, and then the land was taken by scattered family. And then you can follow those things. Now, when you go to the registry, to the deed registry, you find that they are cooking books, you know. Now, you've got this text documentation that you have, and then you've got the deed registry. When you want to marry the two, and then you find that there are certain challenges that you experience in your research. Now, it shows again that how land was taken and how books were cooked, and then also how justice system, you know, in terms of to make that, to officialize, you know, those wrongdoings. And that's why we are saying that as the Klinger family, before we move forward, we need to correct the injustice of the past, because even those portion of land that were taken, You know, we worked for it. You know, it didn't come for free. And when those land that were taken from us, and then it was just a pain, and there was nothing, and even no so ever compensation, because through series of events happened from 1913 up to 1935, we can show, you know how active we were in terms of engaging the systems, and even how much more money that we paid, you know, for instance, from the 11 of, no, from the 8 of September, you know, to the 11, we've already spent about £7, you know, only on correspondence. And then when you calculate the month, you will see, you know, because the whole situation is so exuberant, you know, and that's why I say that I agree in terms of moving forward, in terms of the future, you know, with the previous speaker, and then I think he really unpicked it very well. But also I'm saying that in order to do the justice, because there's a question out there in terms of ownership of land, and people, they don't believe that, you know, a so-called black middle class was there even from the days of immemorial. You know, people, they don't believe that. And I think this is one of the evidence that shows that really we were the victims of the circumstances. And even that circumstances, you know, it was officialized, you know, by Act of Parliament. And also there was a justice system that was backing that. You know, I'm talking about the Supreme Court, I'm talking about the Magistrate Court. No, I'm talking about the ordinary lawyers, you know, that we're practicing then, in terms of making sure that these systems, you know, are creating problems, which then, even now. So basically, that is our presentation. I don't want to go to drill it more, because like I've said that I just wanted to stick to the topic, and then I wanted to show the errors. I wanted to point the discrepancies that had happened then, and then I'm saying, you know, to the portfolio committee, let's find justice in terms of moving forward. And like I've said that, in that process affected young people as age of 3.5 years, you know, and that shows, you know, the vision of then. I'm talking about something that happened 1922, and I'm referring to a situation of my grandmother get disappeared, and on the other hand, the court is saying that she's the obliged person in terms of receiving. And the will, the way it's drafted in 1893, is saying that it's son or daughter, you know, and then now we show how the systems. Now, the point that I'm trying to make, there is a lot of injustice in terms of tax documentation, and deeds registry, it's one of the books that I think it needs to be corrected. Also, to sum up, because we specialize in land, we had land in Joburg, we had land all over, because we were trading, because in 1900 we bought a farm called Dairy Maid Farm, and then which we were transporting cheese and milk, you know, to Joburg. And when you go there, you know, researching that, even the books, you know, you find out that the books are not in order. Now, we need also to ask maybe the government in terms of making sure that those books, you know, and those books are collected, are in order, so that maybe when those research, now we're talking about, for instance, about developing black middle class, but we are building that black middle class from nothing, you know, so there's no substance, there's no base. Now, if maybe we are building everything from a strong foundation in terms of moving forward, and then we've got a point of reference, and basically that is our presentation. So we can go over and over, and as I've said that we are even more than, I would call ourselves, I think everyone, you know, my grandfather had about 6 sons, and their sons and their daughters, they all own land, irrespective of a he or a she. Because in the inventory, when you start, even their families that benefited out of that, the Thazos, the Mvinjelwas, because they were married, you know, to the daughters from the Qinga families. So also they own the portion, and even their land was taken. So I'm not only here presenting the Qinga family. Yes, we are the Qinga descendants, but I'm saying that even other families, you know, also have affected, because as the will say, that son or daughter. So those are our presentation as the Qinga family for now. Thank you very much. And in terms of reference, when I supported the information, I think there are a lot of references, people that they can go to archives, you know, and look at those documents, which I gave references. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tinga. The matter is open for discussions, questions, comments. Honorable Madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this is a very sad situation, and obviously it needs attention, but I do think that it's a little bit out of order in terms of what we're discussing here, namely the amendment to the Deeds Registry Bill. It sounds to me, from what I've heard and what I've read in the documentation, that this should be the subject of a land claim process, and as such should follow that procedure, that the land that the gentleman's family was dispossessed of their land post 1913, and if it was before 1913, obviously that's a matter for when the amendment to the Land Restitution Act comes up. But as far as the Deeds Registries Bill is concerned, I don't believe that this is a specific issue that should be dealt with under that act. The one aspect of it that does need to be taken into account, and it does go towards what we're discussing, is the correct registration of surnames on the deeds register. His case very much supports that we should be able to correct the register accordingly. And obviously that's something that his case underpins. But I don't believe it talks to the actual amendments per se. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can you... Okay, thank you. Honourable Ndapani.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I cannot agree more with my colleague who spoke just before me. I think Mr. Tinga must wait until the window period is reopened again. That is where this position is relevant, not here now.
Thanks, Chair. And first and foremost, let me congratulate you on your appointment as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Rural Development and Land Reform. It's a privilege to us to have you in our leadership. I would also want to take the opportunity to concur with my colleagues on the issue of, I think this matter resides within the land claims issue and it should await such a period. But I would want to assist Mr. Tinga in his application, because I think from the dates he immediately speaks to, raises some issues of its own, that these are beneficiaries of already forced and dispossessed nations in terms of the wars that were fought over 100 years by the Xhosa nation. So we would want in his submission to also gain an understanding when the family is starting in 1893. History tells us, since he's talking of history in his papers, that as early as 1818, Colonel John Graham, a mass murderer, dispossessed the Xhosas of their land, moving them all the way from Keiskamma River to Great Fish River, and therefore creating a buffer zone. Those lands were then cut into portions and sold to people. And I would leave that question, if are they not beneficiaries of those forced nations over the colonial wars that were fought by the likes of the Xhosa nation and the other nations in the Eastern Cape. It's just something to think and look at as he refines his submission and prepares for the land claims. Thank you.
Chair, just to put a stamp on that, I agree with the comments of my colleagues. that this matter, it seems as if it doesn't belong, that it's not relevant to this amendment, but what is relevant, what I've heard, is that the error in the writing of the same name, Binga, Binga instead of Binga. I think this registry bills, it covers that. That needs to be corrected. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, I actually agree with the issue of incorrect surname, but I also want to find out, because there may be now, you find that the surname that they are using, maybe at the later stage, they also used it in their identity documents. So if they want to go back, they still need to also to check there. So I just want to find out as to whether on that case, if they want to correct it, did they also change it to their identity documents as we speak now, so that we know if the surname are still different or they have changed to this new surname. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And then just before you respond, in terms of your documentation here, it indicates that in 1998 you submitted a land claim,
yes.
And it's recording here that it's a work in progress.
Yes.
So can you just, have you received an update so far? Can you just talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, thank you very much, Jefferson. Thank you also to everybody for asking questions. I think in terms of the updates, unfortunately, you don't receive update because you don't have the people with expertise in terms of getting into the information which I've already provided to the department already. And for about 10 years, I let the matter to rest for about 10 years and then nothing had happened. And then 2009, and then I said, no, I think let me stand on my 2 feet and find out more about this application. So you don't get any feedback from government. I haven't received as nothing, and what frustrates is even more frustrating, you know. But this thing, we are very patient about it, you know, because it's history, you know, we played our part then. But the point is, You don't get people with an eager in terms of helping. One, it goes back. For instance, I think other things are going to answer it, you know, combining with other questions that have taken place. What you'll find out on the peace registry, you know, the previous government was so clever. It's quite very confusing. I understand it's not also their fault, because like I've said in my presentation, what it's on the text, it's a man-made, it's not a reality. And what is on the text, you know, cleverly, the same land that you are talking about, you know, which is 1,409,599 square rod originally, and it was subdivided in terms of subdivision and rezoning, and renamed the same name, and subdivide one farm and rename it and then take that to the book. And then when you go out to the book, you find that somebody that is studying those books is very confusing. And that's what happened. I'll make an example. Sunat was divided into Maweni, Pangela, you know. And again, you know, Khatbet, it's in Dunja, you know. And also they rename the same farm in Dunja. No, so it's two. So the point, yes, sir?
Mr. Ndunga, can I just interrupt you? You see, if I think the point that the colleagues were raising was that the matter actually belongs to the land claims. And in terms of your own records, you did submit a claim. And in terms of the records still, there is no finalization of the claim. It talks about work in progress.
which means, therefore, that I think we need to find a way of ensuring that you pursue this matter with the land claims to ensure that if they are seeing work in progress, how far are they? Because we can discuss this thing over and over again, but we will come back to the same conclusion that the matter is in the hands of the land claims. So I think one of the points raised that said the issue of the incorrect surnames and so on, for me, I think that's the matter belong to us here, that we can be able to make a contribution. So I want to make a humble suggestion to you that take the advice that came from the committee that says pursue this matter with the land claims. And I'm sure there might be some remedial actions that we can take in case the progress is not moving according to the pace that it's actually acceptable. So I'm just making this humble suggestion, say that we take your point, it's a very emotive point. The advice that came from Norm Mandela there is also useful in, as you pursue this matter further. So I'm therefore saying, let's not pursue this matter in terms of what resides within the land claims, because at least the advantage is you are within the loop, you're not outside. You've already submitted your claim. So what we need to do is just to make a follow-up to ensure that you find out how far the process is. And then we put the matter at rest at that level. And I'm sure that you will find some, and you make a point that are very slow. And obviously, I think government as a whole admitted the fact that the process has been very slow. And I think there are mechanisms that have been put in place to try and actually fast-track the process. Can we agree on that, sir?
No, I fully agree with that, Chairperson, and thank you about that. And like I've said earlier on, thank you about everybody that have got an input on this matter. But just the last part of it, that also I think we need to... Now, there are names that also that are in the folio report, which they suppose not to be on the folio report. Maybe it's another matter for another discussion. But what we'll find out, in the folio report, you know, the same land is owned by two different people. Some they're supposed to be there, and some they are forcefully beyond the books. You know, so those also are the matters that I think we needed to deal with. Also, I think that's the problem of land claim commission, because they can't move forward, because also, like I've said, that the information that is on the book, it is also concocted. You know, so I think this committee must be aware about that. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation, sir, and we wish you all the best as you pursue this matter with the land claims. But if along the way there are matters that belong to us here, I'm sure we'll be willing to give you a hearing. But for now, let's say that let's put our hopes on the land claims and ensure that all what you are raising find actually a hearing within that process. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good. Okay, so Mr. Ninga, the committee,
yes,
will try to assist you to liaise with the land claims to find out how far the process is.
Mm-hmm.
So you can keep on liaising with the committee to find out, you know, how far the process is.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, colleagues. Well, in terms of the program, yeah, it talks about tea, but I think I saw people drinking. Do you want to break for tea? I don't want to be a dictator and suppress people of what they dearly want to have. If you don't want to have tea, then proceed. If you want tea, indicate. Okay, I take it that we don't want to have tea. We can take tea as we proceed. Of course, the next item will be questions for clarity and discussions. Are there any general comments that we want to make? But I thought we have covered that. I will now invite the department to make comments on the issue of submissions.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning to Chair, and congratulations from the department. We wish you all the best. And as you mentioned yourself, that this is a huge mandate. You are going to hear a lot more as you go along. My name is Brian Mbata. I'm the Acting Chief Registrar of Deeds. Our Director General sends his apologies because he's busy with another engagement with the Minister in Pretoria. So he sends his apology. We want to thank the committee firstly, and the two gentlemen that have made submissions. Suffice to say that the submissions that they have made do not directly affect the sections that we have published for comments, but we will try to assist both of them. If I can just maybe make a few comments, Chair. The committee was supposed to visit the Deeds Office and the Surveyor General's Office some time ago, and the meeting was being postponed all along. So the reason why I'm making this comment first is that it would have assisted the committee to appreciate the comments that the two gentlemen had, so that you can see the formal process and the informal process. So perhaps the secretariat will assist to speed up that visit. The first presentation, Chair, by Mr. McNabb, it's a problem that we it's a government problem. Let me put it that way. That we are aware of the black market where people where land is sold over a glass of wine or a bottle of whiskey, and then the next day they sign an affidavit. But we must also appreciate that this country has had a long history. What Mr. McNabb was talking about are things that takes place in other countries. But then the challenge is that in those countries they've got challenges because they then have two systems, one for the rich and one for the poor. And then if I can just make an example, there were deeds registries for the TPVC states, and there were deeds registries for the rest of the South Africa. And then the challenge with that was that the record keeping, which is one of the critical aspects of it, was not the same. And then you find that because of you apply the lesser standards in terms of the less formal process, you then compromise on some of the details. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be mechanisms for less formal dealing, but I'm just warning the committee to be aware that we come from that history already. We have a variety of rights. We've got permissions to occupy. We've got quitrent rights. We've got grant rights. We've got all sorts of rights, and then we've got freehold, we've had leaseholds, we've got all these things that were done for the sake of the informal settlements, because it was recognized then that it existed. When it comes to land, the challenge is that it's not as easy as registering a car. When you register a car, the car belongs to you only. The law enforcement part then is a problem of transport in terms of the traffic signs and all that. With land, there are various aspects that are there. There are servitudes, there are preemptive rights that the gentleman was talking about. There are usufruct rights. There are there are all sorts of rights that are not there when you deal with movable and immovable assets. So the two are not, it's a very long presentation if we were to start now and say this is what it is. But I would then maybe suggest that the committee start to see the process and appreciate what is there, what is not there. What we are aiming for is what the gentleman was talking about, that we then decentralize our services to the municipalities. Similarly to what the when you renew a license, you can go to a post office for that matter and renew the services. So one aspect of it is the cost of the formal aspect of the current system, and the other aspect is then the access to the services. So those two things we can deal with by the respective departments, which is human settlements and other departments that deals with the creation of those rights. So from the DIS office, we register and note those rights and make sure that there's access access to the public. The other aspect that I wanted to mention, Chair, is that when it comes to surnames, we from the DIS office side, we don't assume that the surname is wrong or right. The surname that is on the identity document is the surname that must be used in the title deed, whether that surname is incorrect or correct. Because you don't want somebody to hijack your property claiming that because they've got the similar surname, then the property should necessarily belong to them. So unfortunately, we come again from that history where somebody was asked you to say, what is your name? And then if you don't have a proper English name, they will then give you a name, like how the Honorable former President was given Nelson Mandela, because the teacher could not pronounce his name, Kholihlahla. So again, Kholihlahla is spelled differently but pronounced differently. So those are the things that affect the issues of surnames, that from the deeds office side, we ensure that the surname that is recorded in the deeds office is the surname that is on the pass, or as it was then, or the identity document, whether it's incorrect or correct. There is a process that you go through of rectifying that surname. So that again ensures that the formal process is followed, that nobody just assumes somebody else's property just because they've got the same name and the same surname. So we will try to assist from our side, if we can get with the NUMAS details to see if we can assist in terms of the process. Jay, I don't want to abuse my privilege. I've got two colleagues that perhaps may want to add a word or two. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, honourable members. Just on Mr. McNabb's. Sorry for that, Chair. My name is George Todis. I'm from the Office of the Chief Register of Deeds. He highlighted the issue of title deeds not emerging for a period of 8 years and so forth. And just want to clarify this: that if the deeds office is not responsible for creating any title deeds whatsoever. The process is like this. Those houses that are RDP houses normally are owned by the provincial government or municipalities. Then it is for the municipalities to transfer those houses
to the beneficiaries of those housing schemes. So in cases where transfer is not taking place, transfer will always take place when the municipalities or the provincial governments have initiated the processes. So if title deeds are not emerging, the people who are supposed to be transferring the land are the registered owners, that being the provincial governments or municipalities. So if there's any problem regarding that, those are the issues that can be discussed with the municipalities and so forth. He also mentioned issues relating to rates. It is not the deed registers that demand rates, but it's the municipalities through an act called the Municipal Systems Act. So in terms of Section 118 of that act, whenever property is going to be transferred from one individual to another, firstly, the outstanding rates should be paid. That is also in the interest of the new buyer, because one wouldn't like to buy a situation, a property in which now is going to be saying, the municipality is owed 100,000, then pay 100,000. The system is such that the current owner, before transferring to the next owner, must pay his dues first so that the new owner gets a property that has got no debt. So I would imagine that is also in the interest of the public. Coming now to the to issues relating to surname, the deed registries has already a section there, which is section 41B, which deals with errors that happen in cases whereby a name has misspelled. Because at the end of the day, these documents, when they get to the deed offices, they are firstly prepared by conveyancers. So the conveyancer will prepare a deed, and the deed office will assume that he, being the person who interacts with the communities, he has been the one who is exposed to the right information. Then the deed office will take whatever information is given by the conveyancer. But if it so happens that something went wrong at the level of conveyancing, there is that section 41B to rectify any errors that came through the conveyancing process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Any addition?
Thank you, sir. My name is Antoinette Reynolds.
Minister, can you show the mic there? Thank you.
Just also to comment to Mr. McNabb's presentation, as just to say that the Deed Registries Act is not familiar with the registration of licenses. It's more deeds of transfer where we convey full ownership. Also, if we look at the Housing Act, as the Honourable Member was mentioning, the function of municipalities there is to ensure that inhabitants have access to adequate housing, and it provides for subsidies and grants for such people to get transfer of houses. It's also maybe a matter that we first have to refer to the regulation board for their consideration before we can add such a change to the bill. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think the comments by the department is actually worthwhile. It sort of provides some clarity on some of the issues. And I think, Mr. Dinga, you, much as the bulk of your presentation was not actually for this committee, but I think you managed to highlight some of the issues that attracted some kind of interest. And the department itself committed itself to try and help you in terms of the whole issue of your rectification of surname. But the point has been made that a surname, the way it is actually noted or written, is as per the ID. Or the Dompas, whichever is in existence at that particular time. So that whether it's right or wrong, but it's the correct way to go, I think I agree with the department. Otherwise, if we try to use the correct surname in terms of our interpretation, which is not what is on the ID,
surely we will run into serious problems, which are much bigger than the one that we're dealing with right now. So I think the department is saying they will be willing to help you. So I think you can link up with them and provide them with the necessary information that can enable them to make their own contribution in terms of assisting you in this particular regard. And I think that moving forward, we will know and appreciate your presentation and say that, as we have said earlier, even the committee here is willing to liaise with you to try and see what help they can offer in terms of making sure that they follow up with the land claims to see how far your claim is and what needs to be done to try and help to fast-track the process. And I think we will leave the matter at that and say thanks to the department for the input that they have given. Thank you very much. Now, in terms of the next item, which is the discussions on the centenary of the 1913 Native Land Act, the item was placed on the agenda on the basis that it was highlighted in one of the previous meetings. And the intention, of course, is to make sure that the portfolio committee, this one, which is the leading portfolio committee on matters that are dealt with by the Departments of Agriculture, Public Works, Human Settlement, and so on, must actually provide a lead in terms of how this discussion should unfold. So what's going to happen is we will, outside this meeting, look into this matter and make necessary preparations so that when I meet with the chairpersons of these other committees which I have mentioned, we need to have some kind of an information on the table that can help the committee moving forward, some kind of a framework. So we're not going to discuss it now, just to indicate that it was discussed on the previous meeting. It shouldn't be lost. It must continue to appear on the agenda until such time that it is acted upon. Is that correct? So that is that. So we are moving towards closure now. From my part, I can only say thank all those who have made their presentations. Thank the department and thank the honorable colleagues who made their own contributions to enhance the debate, and say that we are looking forward to meeting again to make sure that we continue to engage on the mandate that's been given to us. And thank you very much for listening to me and being so cooperative. I hope that set the tone, it can be a foundation of how we move forward from now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The meeting is